Thank you very much for the introduction. Today I'm going to talk about KCAL, kernel supported cost effective audit logging for causality tracking. I'm Shiqing Ma from Purdue University. This is a joint work with Nanjing University, University of Georgia, SRI International, and the University of Wisconsin Madison. So the talk is mainly about forensics with audit log. And how does this work? I will first give some background with an example. On the left-hand side, I'm going to show some example audit logs. So we have audit log logging the process PID 1224. It receives some information from socket 0, and then it writes some information to the file task man. This is just like a file web browser or FTP client downloads a file from the web. And then the user clicks the executable or use the shell to launch this process from the binary. And this file will have some its own activities like reading some files and send to the remote server. When an administrator detects if the socket 1 is actually communicating with the malicious server or it has some malicious behavior information leak from socket 1, we start the investigation from socket 1 and perform the backward tracking using the audit log. From log, we know that the owner process of the socket 1 is the process 4893, and this before sending the information to socket 1, it actually reads some content from the file FD, and this process is created from the binary task map. And tracking backwards one more step, and we got the task map is actually created, downloaded by the process 1224, and before creating this file, it gets information from socket 0. And this is a forensics to actually recover the whole attack story. And Linux audit framework is the most popular audit framework on Linux. It has been integrated with many, many security tools. And the kernel component is actually shipped with the mainline kernel. So the Linux kernel actually provides such a capability. It allows the user to actually log all the system calls, including their timestamp, all the return code, and parameters. It also allows users to monitor the specific file operations like creation, read, write, delete, etc. But we found the Linux kernel framework, Linux audit framework has two major problems, mainly the performance. The first one is it slows down the system significantly, and the second one is it generates very large log files. So for many attacks like APT attacks, the attack life cycle is a few weeks or even a few years. When you try to investigate such attacks, it's the very large log files makes it almost impossible to analyze the whole log. Now I'm going to show some data to support my claim. First, the runtime overhead. We profiled more than 10 applications use the standard benchmarks, and here shows the result. For some applications like Win, the performance is still okay. It's 5% overhead if you enable audit. But for many other applications like Firefox or Apache, the runtime overhead is nearly 40%, which makes the system unusable. And this one shows the space overhead. We profiled 10 machines for 30 days, and this shows the accumulated log size. The logs, the machines are classified into two groups. The server machines are running the HTTP servers or FTP servers, and the client machines are running for the user programs like browsers or just the simple shell programs. As you can see, the client program generates less data, but still it's a few gigabytes per day. And for servers, it generates nearly 40 gigabytes per day. And this is just a very simple lab setup. For many enterprise setup, one hour can actually produce nearly 1,000 gigabytes data per day. So starting from here, we perform some more profiling to see what really causes the overhead. First, I'm going to introduce how the Linux audit framework works. So in the kernel component, we have a few filters. Those filters are basically user-defined rules to see if we want to log this information or not. So when an application makes a system call, it goes through the kernel component, goes through all the kernel-defined filters and the system call logic. And if we find a match, basically we want to log this information, the kernel will send the message to a socket known as a netlink socket. It's a communication mechanism between the kernel space and user space. And then a user space facility, RDD, will collect all the packets and then write them to the disk. So we actually, as we can see, there are three parts which can cause the overhead. The first one is the kernel component. Mainly doing the filtering stuff, we profiled and found that 5% of the total overhead is caused by the kernel filtering. And then another 45% are actually caused by the netlink socket. Mainly you need to dynamically allocate memories and the queuing the packets and send them to the user space. And the half of the overhead is actually caused by the disk I/O in the user space, which will lead to 2 to 40 gigabytes data per day and causes a very high runtime overhead and space overhead. So as it's pretty clear, you know, it's mainly the number of logged events is very large, which causes a runtime overhead and space overhead problem. Very large files actually makes the investigation almost impossible, especially for long-term attacks like APT attacks. And because you need to filter, transfer, and writing all the events to disk, so it can actually cause a lot of very high runtime overhead, which makes the system unusable. So here's a general question. Can we reduce the number of logged events if this is possible? Start from that question, we first analyze the log, the audit log, and we found that the other log is kind of is actually very redundant for forensics analysis. In forensics analysis, we majorly care about the causality. Basically, we want to know if a system object like a process is actually related, if a system subject like a process is actually related to a system object like files or sockets. So we don't really care how many times the dependency appears. So on the right-hand side, I show some logs. And actually, it represents only two dependencies. The file, the PID, the process 244 actually reads data from FD4 and then writes to FD5. And all the other logs are representing the same dependency. Thus, they are very redundant for forensics analysis. Starting from here, we designed the KCAL. The key idea is we don't really want to have such dependency, such redundancy in our log. So we try to remove the redundancy as the first place in the kernel. So we modify the kernel audit logic to filter these redundant events from being generated. To support this log reduction algorithm, we actually leverage another execution unit-based approach to help us do this. I'll talk about this later. And also we modified a few kernel data structures to support our design. And if the final design is we replace the netlink with the shared memory to actually speed up the system. And this is supported by this experiment. It compares a few different mechanisms, communication mechanisms between the kernel and the user space. And we found that shared memory might be the best option for us because it's the most effective one. And here are some background about execution unit part. The dependency analysis in forensics analysis actually is a very hard problem because of the dependency explosion problem. On the right-hand side, I show an example. Suppose you are using Firefox to view a few web pages and eventually you download a file. After a few months, when you try to investigate the log, you start from the file and you get a graph like this. This graph basically tells you the file actually depends on all the sockets it has visited before, which is pretty wrong. However, you don't really know which socket actually is the real source because all the sockets actually affect the content of the other sources of the process, and they eventually may affect the downloaded file. So previously we proposed an approach known as the execution unit-based approach, which basically one execution unit is just one part of the execution. We can partition the whole execution into a few small fine-grained execution units, which actually we can isolate the dependencies. So now if you track from the file, we can correctly identify the socket it depends on. There are more details. If you are interested, please see the paper BEEP published in NDSS 13 and MPI published last year in Unix Security. And based on this approach, we actually identify three types of redundancy in the audit log. The first one is the in-unit redundancy. The left-hand side shows an example, a very typical in-unit dependence, and the right-hand side shows the code. This type of dependency is essentially because in the same unit, a process is doing the same thing, have the same operation on the same object repeatedly. For example, in Vim, it actually uses a tree to organize the contents in the memory. So when it tries to load the file into the memory, it actually use a loop to do this. Each time it's just load a piece of the file and insert into a tree node. And the next time it loads another piece and insert into the tree node. So this will cause a lot of read system calls, but they represent the same dependency, so they are actually redundant. This is actually a very general case because the system call read and write have a very limited buffer size. When you use a read or write system call to do this, actually you have to do it multiple times. Many of the library C functions, libc functions, actually do this automatically. Even though this is transparent to the user, but it actually happens and it's pretty common. And the second type of log redundancy is cross-unit redundancy. The left-hand side shows an example here. Basically, these two units are identical, except they happen in different time. Basically, this type of redundancy are different units doing the same thing. For example, it's a very good practice for the users who actually to edit a file and then save it after some editing, and then edit again and save it. But this will cause a lot of redundancy because essentially you are doing the same thing. If you from the forensics point of view, you just need one of the nodes to actually build the graph instead of many of them, because all the units are actually representing the same dependencies. In this example, the event 2 and event 4 can represent all the dependencies you need, but instead you will have many of them. And the third type of redundancy is the temporary files. So the left-hand side shows an example. All the events here are actually redundant. By temporary file, I'm not saying the files actually exist in the system for a very short time. The temporary file is defined from the provenance point of view. These files are created, operated, and deleted by the same process. Essentially, this file actually is the whole life cycle of this file is only manipulated by only one process. So from the forensics analysis point of view, it's just like a memory variable, but which is just too large to hold in the memory, so it has to be written into the disk. A typical example will be some web resources. When web browsers, like videos and audios, the users are viewing them, a web browser actually fetch them from the servers and then store them locally, and after a short time, they will be deleted to save some space. All these temporary files, they actually don't contribute to any new kind of dependencies, thus they are kind of redundant in forensics analysis. So let's come back to our K-call design and see what see the parts that echoes the log reduction. So the all the logic are in the modified kernel audit part. Basically, we modify all the filter logics to modify all the filter logics to actually have the online reduction system. And to help the reduction, we model all the relationships as a cache. So when you have a new dependency relationship, if it's detected, we will say this is new and we put it into the cache. And if we have a dependency relationship we have seen before, we say we have a cache match and we don't really store the when the process terminates or the file is closed or deleted, we check if the information is needed to be logged. If it's needed, we will put into the shared memory and then use the shared memory actually will transfer the data to the user space and will be logged on disk. So we have three types of caches. The first one is for in-unit redundancy detection, and the second one is for cross-unit redundancy detection. They are in the task struct, and another one is in the file structure to store the status of the file. And here are some very simple highlight evaluation results. On the same workload, the runtime overhead is less than 16%, and notice that all the applications are instrumented. So the runtime here presented here includes the instrumentation overhead, the overhead caused by instrumentation, I'm sorry. And here is the space overhead. We actually apply the same algorithm on the log files to see how this can reduce the log size. And here is the result. For the worst case previously, worst case, we have only less than 4 gigabytes per day. So we remove the 90% of the logs. And here is a more detailed analysis on 5 different machines. On average, we can remove 90% of all the redundant logs, because they are kind of redundant. And we also have more evaluation results on how many caches are actually needed for different approaches, for different programs, and for different types. Please see the paper if you are interested. And finally, I'm going to have some discussion about K-call. So K-call is for forensic analysis only. So after the modification, K-call is no longer a general audit framework. So if you want to know how many system calls are made in 1 hour, it's no longer possible. But Lynx audit framework is for that kind of purpose. That's a difference. And the second of all, K-call actually depends on execution unit based applications. Basically, it requires you to instrument applications, but in general, we think if you have other online log reduction algorithm, it's also possible. The key idea is to remove the redundancy before the log is actually generated, so that we can save some overhead cost by transferring and writing to disk and storing them. And third, K-call create modifies the Linux source kernel, so which raises the concern of porting it from one version to another version. We tried 3.19 and 3.2, and we found that there are only 8 lines of differences. It's basically the kernel moves one data structure from a field from one data structure to another. And there are some related works. And in summary, we propose the K-call, the kernel-supported cost-effective audit logging for causality tracking. It's based on the Linux audit framework, mainly used for forensics analysis. It features low runtime and space overhead. And the key idea is to reduce the redundant events before generating them. So this can reduce the overhead cost by transferring, writing, and storing the redundant events. And, thank you. I'm ready for questions.
There is time for questions. I had a question. So instead of thinking about removing and compressing log entries, like removing the redundant entries, couldn't you approach this problem in terms of, I want to build the provenance graph, what are the things that I need to be there to get a correct one? And then you can kind of look at whether edges are there or in the recent past and not add them. So instead of thinking about what you can remove in terms of redundancy, you just think about what do I need to construct the provenance graph. Like, wouldn't that be a different way to approach this problem that possibly give you greater savings?
Yes, it's a very good suggestion. Actually, this work is done following your suggested approach. Basically, we analyze the logs and try to find a minimum set which helps us to build the complete graph. And then all these events will be kept. And we compare the two parts and see which part, the left part, basically the part eliminated, other parts are redundant. And then we analyze why they are redundant and how this redundancy is caused. And then we propose this approach.
Yes. I see, but why insisting in keeping things as a log instead of thinking about storing entries that will allow you to have like an incremental approach for building the provenance graph? Or maybe it's the same thing, right? But the way you explain it is that you're still trying to keep a log there. You remove some entries, but
yes,
the main thrust of it is not that I want to have the provenance graph, I want to have a shorter log, right? It seems to be a different way to look at the problem.
Oh, yes. That part is the implementation concern. It's because we want to keep using the same log format, because there are already very mature tools to help us to build, for some other purposes, not only the graph. So that's why we want to keep the same log format and keep the logs.
Got it. Any additional questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.